cyclocross friends, and welcome to Crosshairs Radio episode 69. This is the first real episode of the off season, and to celebrate that, I have two of my friends, Danny Koniowski and Jorge Brito, and they are going to lend a hand in breaking down the movie Premium Rush. Both of these guys grew up as professional couriers. Jorge now works in bicycle advocacy, also in fundraising. Danny has stayed in the game, owns his own company, Steadfast Messenger. And they have a lot of insight into the JGL and Michael Shannon vehicle Premium Rush. It was a good time. If you are looking for an in-depth review of this movie, you're probably not going to get it here. It was more of a jumping off point for a pretty cool discussion from many aspects of what it takes to be a professional bicycle courier. A community that I feel akin to. You know, a lot of Crosshair Cycling, when it started, was made up of couriers. I think there is an entry point for messengers to get into bike racing through cyclocross. It's really, you know, almost like an alley cat on grass without checkpoints. So it seems like those cultures work well together, and it's fun to have these guys in the basement to break down the movie. Before we get to that, we have tons of sponsors, and that's because of you all downloading and listening. So thank you. And through that, we have a new sponsor, which is Shred Science Nutrition. Now, full disclosure here, Shred Science Nutrition, owned by a friend of mine, Carrie Hatley. Carrie used to, she used to race bikes in the DC area for Crosshair Cycling. Moved out to Colorado, got all credited and took classes and has all the degrees and all the certificates necessary as a nutritionist. And she started this company to get you to your goals as far as fitness and nutrition goes. It's pretty darn awesome. And she is making custom nutrition programs for people who want to get in better shape, want to feel better about themselves. Maybe you want to like cut weight. Maybe you want to like improve your cycling, you know, your climbing, whatever it is. You know, she talks about, she was fast and fit, and before she knew anything about nutrition, she was just doing whatever she wants it. Now, knowing what she knows, she's like, man, if I was able to put myself on a better eating plan while I was training, I could have done a lot better. And it, right there, that kind of testimony for me had me convinced. And I signed up, and I'm pretty stoked to be working with Carrie. It's all about counting macronutrients, and you know, she builds a plan for you based on that, tells you, you know, everything that you need to do as far as how to better give yourself better education about the food that you're eating. And it really comes down to eating pretty much maybe the same stuff that you're already eating, maybe tweaking that a bit, but just looking at what it goes into that food, looking at the macronutrients in the food and working within the plan that she gives you. Go to shredsciencenutrition.com, learn more about the company, learn more about Carrie, shoot her an email, let her know that Crosshairs Radio sent you over there, and yeah, get those six-pack abs, and kick ass on the bike come next season, or this season if you do that road thing. Health IQ, they're back as a sponsor as well. I'm not going to bore you with Health IQ because you all know that they are the ones who are going to get you the best rates on life insurance. What I am going to tell you is, if you haven't gone to healthiq.com/cxhairs and filled out that survey, get us those click-throughs, then do that now. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to this show, and it means a lot to the Wide Angle Podium podcast network. So healthiq.com/cxhairs. Finally, we got a contest going on, and it is going on through Michelin Tires. Michelin Tires was a sponsor last year. They liked what we did for them, so they're coming back. They have a new line of tires. They're power endurance tires. These things are going to get a smooth ride for you, yet they're also, they got a little more flat resistance in there, so you can go further on them without giving up performance, but not having to be sitting on the side of the road changing your tires. I have a pair of these in the basement that I am going to give away. This contest is going out throughout Crosshairs Radio and also Slow Ride Podcast. Basically, it's an Instagram contest. All you have to do is use the hashtag WAP Power Contest. WAP, that's Wide Angle Podium. WAP Power Contest. Don't put any spaces in there or it kills your hashtag. Take a picture of you riding. Take a picture of your Michelin tires if you have them. If you don't, it's okay. Take a picture of your water bottle. Take a picture of your cat. Take a picture of your socks. It doesn't matter. Just post a picture and include the hashtag WAP Power Contest, and you may be able to win a pair of these tires. That's pretty cool. Pretty low stakes right there, so we can all do that. Hey, do me a favor, when you do that, also tag CX Airs in there so I know that you all are following through. Lastly, before we get to our show, wideanglepodium.com, Dirt Field Recordings. Lindsay's killing it. She's got another awesome one on there. She talks to Steve Cullen, and he talks about eating insects. How can you not want to listen to that? Solo Ride Podcast, those guys, this is it. You know, we may be off season for cyclocross. Those guys are on season for road, and they are in some early season form. So go listen to the Slow Ride Podcast, Chris Horner, Quiz Corner. That's all you need to know. I fixed it for them, by the way. They were just saying Chris Horner Corner. The quiz is what makes it work, guys. The quiz. You need the quiz in there. All right. Premium Rush. Danny Koniowski, a.k.a. Danny K. Jorge Brito. Lots of beers. My basement. We're going to learn all about courier culture and the movies that try to ape it.
All right. It's the cyclocross off season, so to keep Crosshairs Radio exciting and interesting, we're gonna try something a little different from time to time, and that's one of those times. So in the basement studio, I have with me Danny Koniowski and also Jorge Brito, who not only race bikes, race cyclocross, but also finger quote race,
definitely
dyed in the wool bicycle messengers. So what we decided to do, we just had a little film festival upstairs. We watched the classic 2012 film, Premium Rush. Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Michael Shannon.
And fake Rosie Perez.
And fake Rosie Perez. And yeah, we're gonna break it down from a messenger point of view.
We're gonna brutally dissect this.
Yeah, we're gonna do it. And we may play a couple quick clips. I don't know how smoothly that's going to integrate into this. But even before that, Danny, you got up there right after it filmed. You lived in New York for a while. Yep. And you said that, pull that towards you a little more. And we got to hear you. You can just yank on it. It'll come towards you. How many years did you play in bands?
I don't know how that's applicable to this.
You were a singer? You know how microphones work?
They didn't have I didn't have the thing that made you not get electrocuted, though.
Yeah, okay.
Like you do in your fancy basement. I played in basements where people were peeing, not in the bathrooms of the basement.
But yeah, you were saying while we were watching this that you were actually up there when they had the premiere.
Yeah, I moved up to New York after they were done filming the film, but I was there during the theatrical release, and they actually had lots of bicycle couriers come to the red carpet premiere, and I was lucky enough to be a part of that, and it was pretty awesome. There was my favorite part of telling that story would be that Josh Whitesnake and I, who also were couriers in Washington, D.C., used an important courier skill that you learn in Washington, D.C., which is sneaking things into places. Because we actually paraded down the red carpet right before all the actors and everything. And they wanted us to look like couriers. They're like, bring your bags, bring whatever. So, and the group rode there. And
they wanted it to be legit.
Right. So, yeah. We wanted it to be legit. And so we all went to a liquor store beforehand and just filled our bags with shit to bring it into whatever fucking fancy movie theater it was that's on. Like I don't remember which one it was, but and Whitesnake and I were walking first with, you know, whiskey and beer in our bag, And we got through the red carpet, came upstairs, and then it just became a regular movie theater again, and there was security there that wanted to check our bags. He and I, being two couriers from Washington, D.C., took our bags off, opened it, and walked right by, and behind us was, like, the cartoon-style line of everybody be like, gah! And stopping and running into each other and getting their beer confiscated. And I think we might have been the only two couriers who got whiskey and beer into the theater.
So
we snuck packages into the Capitol building for a bunch of years. You know, it's like,
and it was more of like, I belong here, and you just didn't even stop. And
I
was just
I guess they didn't even think about it. Yeah. Well, I think they felt that they were supposed to belong, but you know, it's like when you're faced with a security guard being, let me see your bag, you just walk right by them with your bag open.
Yeah, or pretend that you can't hear them. That's the best line of defense for a courier.
All right. So we start out this movie, and at the very beginning, we got JGL here lying on the ground, just being hit. And I think
that's problem number one. He's laying down, being lazy. He needs to get to work.
That seems right to me, though. He's on the nod. You don't know. We just met this character. If I was new to town and I saw a courier laying in the middle of the road, I'm like, I don't know that dude. That's just how he do.
A real gravy dog would not be laying down. They'd be working, and they'd have their bag full of packages.
Yeah, but I'm just not saying. I still didn't lose my respect for him because he was laying in the road.
So, but I think the first comment was you were sort of giving the rundown of what he's wearing and also the helmet. And yeah.
He looks like a tool.
He really does look like it's like his third day on the job.
Stuff stenciled on his shirt, like is he got out of jail or something? I mean, the chain's accurate. Anyone that worked in New York or was, you know, into heavy artillery, you carry a chain. I've had a chain like that for 20 years, which is older than most dudes on the road right now.
I did switch to use the chain in New York, but not because it's heavy duty. It's just because there's nothing to lock to in New York, and what you need to lock to is the really thick light posts, and the New York chains that Kryptonite makes basically are exactly the right length to get around one of them.
Yeah, and in here, so he's wearing his chain as a belt. It's pretty common.
Accurate.
Yeah,
the old school move is around the neck.
Yeah. Like bandolero style, that's basically it. You know, we're meeting him.
Common scene, right there.
Yeah, where he's run into a cabbie. Cabbies are looking at him. From my own experience, the cabbie is yelling at him right now for being an asshole and getting in his way, even if that's not the case. Never once asking if you're okay or. okay, well, let's since we're here and we're looking, we got what do we got? Fixed gear bike.
Wrong.
We got the bullhorn bars. You know what are we looking at here as far as transportation goes? Choices.
Me personally, like, only rookies rode track bikes. At least the generation of courier-dom that I came up in.
And let's because I did a bad job introduction wise. So give us your background courier wise.
So my first courier gig was in Richmond in 2001 ish, 2002. I don't know.
Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And back then, like the only dudes that were messengers were people that were into like road racing, and but they needed a day job, so they were messengers. Couriers, you know. And then lived in New York for a little bit, moved to Philly, worked in Philly for a super long time. And it was like an evolution. Like the rookies rode track bikes because they thought that was like, you know, what you were supposed to do. Like, oh, I'm a courier, I'm going to put on my uniform and blah, blah, blah. And the old heads and the people that actually wanted to make money rode bikes. So like in this movie, I think it's funny, like the guy that gives them so much shit is riding a road bike. And like, if I could go back in time, I would have erased my first couple of years riding a track bike because my knees are now destroyed. But for the majority of the time that I worked, I rode a road bike because you want to go fast. You want to not kill your body, ride a road bike. Duh.
Zach Blackburn, or a.k.a. Zach Star from Track Star, used to refer to messenering on a road bike was like playing Doom on easy compared to riding a track bike.
Yeah.
What was when you were working, Danny, not to say that you're not working now, but now as a company man, you know,
Yeah.
You're not.
I ride the desk these days.
What was your, before the cargo bike days, what was your bike of choice?
I was more of a road bike guy. I mean, track bikes were an important part of me getting deeper into cycling, definitely, and I would never discredit that. But I'd always messengered on road bikes.
Yeah.
Cannondale Crit, or early, like, 80s Cannondale. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Courier bike.
All right. A little bit more into here, we see him making, like, you know, his first delivery of the day, and he's locking up his bike, and then he's about to go into the building and takes off his helmet. And that was like a big sticking point with both of you. And then that happened.
Okay. That scene offends me because as anyone who's ever been a courier, like, your mind becomes so drilled into just saving time and money and like focusing on just, you don't want to waste anything.
No, for me, it feels like it just illustrates this character as what the character is, because it does remind me of a couple of dudes who I know, and it's more like, oh, you're just one of those weird guys. I probably would never have talked to this guy if we worked in the same company. I was like, that guy's weird.
Yeah, he takes his helmet off.
That guy takes his helmet off. It's like, why does he do that?
Well, and it's also like, you don't want to waste anything, like, you know, like, why would I waste time taking my helmet off and then putting it back on? Because, well, I'm not going to do that. And same thing. It's like, why would I wash my clothes? I'm just going to be dirty tomorrow. Who cares?
I would still wear my helmet at the bar most of the time.
And then, actually, right after that, he walks into the building, goes to sort of the concierge at the lobby of the building, and has her sign for a package. Huge, like, you know, skyscraper, probably 1,000 offices in there. And that was sort of another red flag.
Yeah, what they skipped was them being like, "Hey, go outside, go around back.
Hey, you're subhuman. What are you doing?
Go to the messenger center."
Following that point, then we actually get to his, I think it was his delivery after that, and you guys were a little confounded by the meticulous nature of him signing, getting things signed for, and
doing paperwork
on the job.
I used to live with this guy, very, just an interesting character. And I would come downstairs to eat breakfast, and there'd be piles of, like, manila envelopes. I'd be like, yo, what is this? He's like, I gave up on my run. I don't care. Fuck them. I don't care. What are they going to do, fire me? I'm like, well, yeah, they probably could, because all of your paperwork from your housing and urban development run is in our kitchen right now. He's like, rah, 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 rah. And then I would just watch, like, week after week, like, the stacks get bigger and bigger. Jeez. And eventually, somebody would just throw it away, you know? Yeah. I was like...
Yeah, I'm just going to say that I think it was Thursday, me and my business partner were in our storage space staring at our pile of paperwork, being like, so are we just going to throw that away? No, we're just going to throw that away. So, I mean, now as the owner of a courier company, we just throw that shit away.
But you don't want to tell everybody that works for you that.
We throw that away.
I mean, you should tell them, like, oh yeah, write down when you picked it up and you dropped it off and get a legible signature. I can't even say it. Legible signature.
What were you saying? You used to just put a C on there.
I used to write a C with a dash, and I did it for years and years and years. And people were like, what does that mean? I was like, oh, it means complete, because I completed the job. Like, who signed for it? You know, the guy. The 11th floor, you know, he's like the... Yeah.
In my first company when I was a rookie, we had two guys named Jesse, one who was Fat Jesse, one who was Skinny Jesse. The skinny one was fat, the fat one was skinny, obviously. You know how this goes. Nicknames. That's another thing this movie's missing is nicknames.
Yeah.
There weren't too many nicknames.
Well, I mean, Wiley is the main...
And I was wondering, it would actually make more sense if that was his nickname.
I think that's... Because that's like... He's like, what, like the Coyote?
Or Numbers.
Well, he was just a shitty courier who crashed all the time.
Like, yeah.
Wiley Coyote's constantly running into things. I feel that would maybe make sense.
Yeah, but nobody else in there really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But or numbers, like people.
Right.
Or you like I know guys, I'm like, oh, Matt 6-7. Yeah. Like, oh, because there was five Matts, and like there's like drunk Matt, there's like, you know, weed Matt, there's, oh, and then his you know, radio number was 67, so.
Yeah. Well, like Fat Jesse basically would, when they'd call him on the radio, like for, because you'd give your PODs at the end of the day, sometimes if it was a busy day, and he would just be sitting in the park just
what's POD
your proof of delivery or whoever signed for something. We'd be in the park and they'd just be like, and who signed for this one? And he'd just roll 30 40 PODs, just making them up making up times, just like rolling with them. I used to do
distros for Amex, and like you'd get like 30 jobs and you just like go to places and just throw them at people. I'd be like, Ray Capo, just making things up. Like, yeah, because...
I got a Che Guevara signature recently.
Oh, amazing.
And I was looking at amazing. It. Amazing. Like, huh, is this your real name?
It was weird. Well, that's actually, brings up a good point, talking about radio numbers. Another sort of thing that y'all noticed right away is everybody in this movie has a headset.
Which is insane. Nobody does.
Yeah, you have a brick or Nextel or get text.
Yeah, nowadays it's all text. Nextel shit the bed a long time. Am I allowed to curse on this radio show? Do we just get
that? Yeah, no, we're good.
Sorry, okay, but
if I hear that Nextel, I can't even like tell you what the sound is. But if I heard it, I'd be like, I'd grab my.
It was funny. Like, I knew people who worked for like when Sprint bought Nextel, mm-hmm. and so many people upset when that the whole walkie-talkie feature just went away.
The old Nokia, the brick.
Yeah. So the main sort of plot point of this movie is that JGL, former law student who just wanted to get paid to ride, and but still. Do we have? He always needed money, but so he gets this one job, and that's sort of the key to this. It's this one job to take this ticket. Do you remember the addresses? Because the first thing, Danny, you said is that's just an idiot dispatcher to even.
I dispatched in Manhattan, in New York, and if that job would have came to me at 5:15 p.m., I would have given it to a walk-in courier.
Yeah,
who would have ridden the train there. Who probably would have been up there anyway, because you're not going to sit. I mean, we send bikers uptown sometimes.
So how far? How far and what distance and how much time do you think it would have?
That pickup was on 100 West 116th Street. And you'd go there every once in a while. But for the most part, that's what you use your walking couriers for, is to go up there. The things that the train's going to be way faster for and whatnot. But
as somebody that owned their own courier company at one point, I would have just said, we're not going to do that.
We should call somebody else. But this was a personal friend. They had to do it.
Don't give a shit. First of all, don't pick up the phone after 5 or 4:50.
Or you just insist that we could do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
They also didn't tell you what day of the week this was.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of it too. If it was a Thursday, we'd be like, we can absolutely do that for you. We'll just have someone there first thing in the morning.
What is what is the first rule of being a courier?
Don't care. Don't care. The moment that you care, because if you care about your feelings. Or you care about, your well-being, you're done. Just don't care. Because no one else cares. That your dispatcher doesn't care about you. The people who are paying you don't care. In theory, they want you to do a good job, but don't care. That got me through a lot of really shitty days.
And there's proof of that everywhere. It's especially on the East Coast. Most everybody's an independent contractor who's treated like an employee. So that's just... proof and point that no one gives a crap.
Don't care.
And most, if anyone who's, I think NICA is a term that most people wouldn't understand anymore. And it's not even important to explain what it is, but if anyone gets that reference, they'll be like, no one cared about us.
Yeah.
But there was, I don't know.
There's a court case about that somewhere, like deep in the bowels of somewhere.
So, talking about that, this takes place in New York City, and I think that when we're watching it, especially Danny, since you worked there, you're sort of pointing, familiar with some of the characteristics of that messenger community there. But you guys have also, you're talking about Richmond, you worked in Philadelphia, you worked in D.C., New York.
And Richmond.
And Richmond, that's right, and Richmond as well. Just about the different, give us a little look at the different characteristics, different personalities of each of these communities on the East Coast, Mid-Atlantic.
Or everywhere. I mean, just from traveling and knowing people. I mean, you can go first.
I haven't done that much traveling, but I mean, every city's different. Every city, I mean, just, and it's, you can define it in lots of sorts of ways, but let's just say New York, and for instance, Jorge and I, when we started watching the movie, our favorite character was the old Rastafarian courier who they show, who's just, yeah, who's, and that's a real bicycle courier. That is a great depiction of a dude who's been around forever, and yeah, that guy's what's up. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, yeah, that's a real courier that we've seen many times as well, but he wouldn't have lasted too long.
Yeah,
and
then, but even the...
And Jorge and I are not in this movie because we were the poor bastards actually out there trying to do work. and then having to leave work to go to, like, our bartending jobs afterwards or whatever to actually try and make some money and make this a viable life.
But you talk about, like, the Rastafarian guy, and there, early on, there's the scene about him, you know, another... And this food guy who crashes into a cab, and then he's out there like putting up cones around him and that kind of stuff. And that, you actually saw that as maybe the realest
absolutely
scene
there.
There was
one time I was at I think it's Astor Place, whatever, where the big giant cube that you can rotate is around. Yeah, yeah. Do you know where that is?
St. Mark's.
Exactly, right there. I was hitting that intersection once. I was heading northbound. And it was a rainy day. It was crazy. And then from my right came the other. So I was a bicycle courier. That one archetype is like the white dude I was probably riding a track bike. I don't know. And then from my right comes this other archetype, which is the Latino guy on his bike that has fenders and like probably aero spokes, and it's wrapped in crazy tape because that's the archetype of the Latino food delivery guy. And then northbound coming the wrong way is an old Asian man on a electric bicycle as well, and we all hit each other. We're all yelling at each other, and then the Asian man just starts laughing, and we all just look at what's going on. We all just start laughing, and there's this camaraderie even just across bicycle delivery, and I think only exists in New York. Like, there's so many people working on bicycles there.
That's what you're saying. There's so many cliques and sub cliques in there. It's just a huge
whether
community.
You're a just in the traditional bicycle messenger way, there's sub cliques. And then now that there's food delivery that is not just the Latino dudes or the old Asian guys, that there's food delivery done by, like, for the app crowd. So there's, like, the market that would have been your average rookie courier at the crappy company, that the crappy company doesn't exist. Now they work for Postmates. There's just so many people who deliver things on bicycles in Manhattan that it's pretty ridiculous and crazy, and no one will ever know it. There were some days where I would go, like weeks without seeing a certain person on the road. And then some days where I would see the same person 20 times in one day, and it's amazing.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, you know, having your eyes open and seeing the people that you work with. It's when you, I don't want to be like philosophical. It's when you don't see the people around you
job. Bicycle messengers
it's right.
We're supposed to be philosophical. But it's we smoke weed in a park all day.
If you saw the same dude every single day, and the fucking Rasta dude wearing Tim's, riding a shitty bike who only did 5 jobs a day but was out there every single day, no matter what, every day, and you, like, give him the nod, be like, yo, what's up? You see him and you know him. It's the rookies, it's the people that don't have respect, that don't recognize that guy and don't give a shit and don't put into the community. Because that, for me, messengering, and this is kind of addressed in the movie, I guess, in a way, because everyone kind of looks out for each other. There's not any, like, other job, like, oh, I wait tables, and I'm going to go down to the restaurant and, like, buy a couple beers for, like, you know, homeboy that I know that had a shitty day or, you know, sprained his ankle. Like, no.
It's well, if you see that at the end of the movie where, there's not going to be the waiters unite to stand up for somebody who's getting dicked around or something,
The courier community, like, you all look out for each other. Like, I could go to any other city and be like, I messengered here to here, and I know you, and it's different. Let me crash on your couch.
One thing, Danny, I think you were pointing out, which was interesting, talking about the different communities, at least D.C. versus New York, was the attitudes of the old versus young.
Oh, yeah. In D.C., the old couriers, there's some real old dudes on the road, especially for there being... I actually counted it a very slow day at Recorder of D's. I just wrote down as many couriers that I could who are still on the road, and I got to 70 of dudes whose names I actually know, and I just wrote down the descriptions of at least 20 other guys that I was like, that dude with the bike with the, you know, like, I don't know his name. So I think there's like 100 dudes left, but like the old guys historically are kind of assholes and demand some respect, and that's kind of how I came up in the scene as well, and that kind of meant a lot to me in some sort of, it's like, I need to earn these dudes' respect. And I feel like just now, like, 14 years later, I finally, maybe sometimes on the right day, if I'm wearing something they recognize, sort of get it. And
Cannondale road bike guy, yo.
Yeah.
Yo, Cannondale. Yo, what's up?
Yeah, I never had a nickname. That was when I started, there was too many Dans, and there was Meth Head Dan, there was Dan Baltimore Dan, there was a, I don't know, but I just never got a name. I was just that other Dan, and now there's still
not even Danny K, because your last name's too hard to pronounce.
I got Danny K became my like nickname when I lived in New York somehow, and I don't know how that happened, but everyone just calls me Danny K now.
I didn't even know you had a last name.
But then you were saying it was sort of flipped in New York as far as old to young.
Absolutely, the old heads. When I like my first day in New York, all the old heads, they were all so nice and just wanted to shoot the shit and just talk, and they were great. And then every rookie, and there's so many rookies and new ones like every day, and you see them and they're just like talking shit, like, and then you never see them ever again. And it's crazy. One of my first days in New York, speaking about one of the choice lines from this film being, like, what was it? Fixed gear, no brakes, can't stop. What I don't even know. What
don't want to or something.
I was heading westbound on, I don't remember where I was, probably in the 30s, actually around like Herald Square. And this dude literally pulled up next to me. I was riding like my steamroller with front and rear brakes. And he just looked at me and this guy pulled up. He was like, what did he say? He said, nice bike, man. But you know, your brakes just slow you down. And then he like just ripped it in front of me and like kind of disappeared into the traffic. And then I just seriously see his bike in the air. And he just like was yard sailed in the middle of like 8th Avenue. It was incredible. And I rode past him. He kind of looked at me and his shit was everywhere. It was like an old lady. She was probably dead. You know, it was crazy. It was some scary stuff. But it's like, that really, man? Like, you're going to. If these young kids there just have this mentality that you're supposed to do that's how you do this job, and that just that's not how you do any job. Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
But that was always, I mean, we'd see that like in DC.
That's like being a janitor and being like, I like your mop, but dipping it in the mop bucket just slows you down. You know? It's
like, but also you don't get like rock star janitors who are just going to do it like a couple months. And
my high school had a rock star janitor.
Yeah,
that's a different podcast altogether.
We're going to have to come back for that one too. It is the off season.
We're going to lose your entire listener base.
Oh, okay. Well, here's another thing. Just going back to the nitty gritty, even just in the beginning of this, what you pointed out, movie versus real life. One, bag size and bag type.
Wow, yeah. I mean, that's...
That's why these people are all obviously the rookies in this film. This film starts to make more sense to me when you think about it through the lens of, like, these are all rookies.
Yeah, their bags are too small.
Especially for New York.
And they're all wearing sling bags, which back when...
Which we would think of like, oh, that's a messenger bag.
Yeah, I mean, that's how things started, but the whole industry's evolved to like backpacks and like people with these massive bags, you know? And I remember dudes had like kind of like, not tiny bags, but like, you know, a normal size messenger bag because it was like, I deliver envelopes, I deliver, you know, paper, and I'm... A copy box, call a car. Give me the full temp, pay me for that, and call a car. I'm not doing that shit.
Or I never, until I moved to New York, I never saw anyone put a box in their bag. Because in DC, if you put a box in your bag, you were a loser. You had no clue. You put them on your bars. And like that was like, that's how you proved that you were harder than anyone else, is that you had a box or two or sometimes three on your bars.
One in the bag, two on the bars.
You could only have a box in your bag if you had at least one on your bars.
And now, I mean, that's what blows my mind about courier companies or, you know, courier bag companies. They make these stupid giant bags to, like, deliver food. Like, let's deliver 1,000 tacos. No. Put it on a cargo bike. Put it on a car. Why would you want to carry that much stuff?
I have no comment related to food delivery.
You all don't do any food delivery?
No.
Okay. Good. Above that?
No, I wouldn't say I'm above it. It's just that...
It's a different thing.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone wants to advertise free delivery.
Right.
And if you're the delivery company...
The margins are low.
Well, and you all started... you know, not to age y'all, but you started when you were actually delivering documents and sort of went through that whole change in the sort of the email and the end of faxes even. And because before it was like originally it was like, oh, the fax machine is going to kill it. And then people still needed original signatures and then email. And then, I mean, in D.C. it was anthrax, I think, kind of.
9/11, September 11th killed the end. I remember that. I mean, I knew tons of couriers. And then after September, they were like, I didn't work for a week because we didn't know. Nobody knew what to do. They just closed everything. We just sat around for a week. And then I mean, that's how I got into, I knew what a bike courier was because I would go to shows. And I knew people when I was in high school who were couriers and go to the Wilson Center and see dudes with their teeth knocked out and be like, I'm a bike courier. I'm like, what is that? You know? I'm like, you make how much money? You made $300 today to stand in line and then to ride around and hang out and drink beer at DuPont? What?
Yeah.
It blew my mind.
If there's anybody listening who actually has any interest in what that means, line standing, that's a very DC-specific thing.
Yes, that line standing. Yeah, talk about that.
Crazy. How much time do we have? Because I can go on forever about how insane line standing is.
But it is, and it is truly, like, line standing truly is an industry that only really exists in D.C.
In Washington, D.C., yes.
Yeah, and just explain a little bit about...
It's when there's a congressional hearing and certain people want to be in that congressional hearing, they can pay to have someone stand in line to
mainly lobbyists
who can take up a space in a line to get you into that spot. But it doesn't finish there because then the buildings aren't open all the time. And sometimes the need to have someone in that line is more than the hours allowed for them to be in that building. So then you will stand in line outside of the building. But where do you stand in line? There's these kind of fictitious rules and these weird players in this game that define that. And there's no regulations about it at all. It's just this strange, almost LARPing type of feel that goes along
with these rules. So is it like government officials? Or is it just like the line standers themselves have just figured out these rules?
It seems to be just the line standers themselves. Yeah. And usually it's courier companies. But then there's also line standing companies themselves, and the line
standing. So there are actual companies that are just line standing companies,
and they typically hire homeless people.
That's changed.
Bicycle couriers typically hire homeless people, so you know it's just something in the landscape.
Is there any? So does any subcontracting go on? Like if you're a messenger,
that's the way you make the money.
Follow then that's the way actually hire somebody.
Remember when the Toyota brakes stopped working?
Yeah,
and they had the hearings for that.
Yeah,
I made. I think the check that I got cut for that week was like $14,000 because I stood in line for, I think, 48 hours straight, but not just of myself. Me and Evil Steve and a couple other couriers basically were put in charge of organizing this line standing, holding, I think, maybe 18 spots. So, and there's all these fictitious, crazy rules about, like, when you're outside of the building and you're in this certain intersection, or like standing in line or sleeping in a sleeping bag, you can hold 3 spots. But when you're in the building, you can only hold 1 spot. So for the hours that we had one person being able to hold the 3 spots, we would pay ourselves for those 2 empty spots.
Right.
It was crazy. And I quit after I got that check. That's when I quit messaging the first time. I was like, boo, boo. And I don't know what I did, but.
That's amazing. And then it's not even that. I just remember, like, for the National Art Museum, when they'll have, you know, they'll be like selling, not even selling tickets, giving away tickets, but it's like the line waiting for that. Wow. You know,
The only line stand that I really have heard of been any sort of new thing in the industry is that restaurant Roses in Capitol Hill.
Really?
Quick Messenger Service has like an exclusive contract on line standing
for
reservation. And I kind of always thought it would be something interesting to bring to like Apple stores and product releases and stuff like that, but it hasn't really caught on at all, I think.
Yeah.
Like in New York, like Supreme, those people stand in line there. If there's someone who really wants to spend a lot of money, like, pay someone else to stand in line for you.
Yeah, and then just to explain what happens, so these lobbyists will hire somebody to stand in line, and then when is it that at a certain point you're calling them and say, hey, get down there?
Funny enough, most of the time, honestly, most of the time that I was standing in line for someone, they never showed up.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Or they would just show up and be like, oh, the line's small. Well, do we have someone? Oh, whatever, we'll just get in the back of the line. But there's this one dude This one dude, I'll say his name. Fuck it. It's Kadir, this guy from Washington, D.C. He's the ultimate hustler. I bet he's never heard of the internet. He's a crazy old Tunisian dude. I have watched him hustle line standing spots for like $1,000 cash. And he'll like come up to whoever's in the front of the line. He's like, how do you want to make $600? And the courier will be like, what? And he's like, watch this. And he'll like go back to the line, find just the fattest cat back there and sell a spot and sneak the dude in right as the doors open. Because often, especially when they're heavily publicized, they'll let the press in first.
Yeah.
So there might be 100 people in line, but they'll only let 6 people in. And they open the doors and they close them. And then what do? There's no regulating body over any of this. It's like standing in line in an elementary school and you cut the line. Right. There's really...
And
there's
what are
no
you going to do? Yell at
yeah,
dude?
Exactly. It's amazing. It's a fascinating subcultural niche.
So
there are
finger quote couriers who that's all they do, right? Just
I have no
stand
clue.
In line.
Oh, there, yeah. were.
There were. There were.
I
yeah.
mean, I don't know if...
You go do a run and be like, oh, you got to go stand in line.
But it was great because a lot of them would start at like... 10 o'clock hearing was kind of the standard and it would be like an 8 o'clock time call or 6 o'clock. Time call, so you'd either get 2 to 4 hours getting paid $25-$30 an hour before your day even starts, before you can deliver a package, and you would just sleep there for a couple hours and you'd start your day and you'd already
be hungover
like
and do a crossword puzzle.
Mm-hmm. That's outstanding.
Oh, and the cafeteria and all those congressional buildings is great. And it's really cheap.
Yeah,
it was awesome. They all had soy milk because of Dennis Kucinich once he was in the office.
That's
great.
Right. That's right. That's outstanding. So another thing, especially from the time that you all started until now, you know, one of the big things here is he has his little sort of Google Map-esque directions that he's always plugging everything into.
I think that's just because you can't buy maps anymore.
Yeah.
I don't even know where, if someone was like, go buy me a map, I'm not sure if I would be able to tell you where there was.
I guess
because in DC, there used
gas
to be the,
station or... Or, I mean, what I remember is you were like, oh, I'm a rookie. And then somebody would be like, oh, here's a cheat sheet. Here's a map.
Right. So talk about that. So you both had mentioned, like, cheat sheets.
Yeah, it'd be a Xeroxed. You'd go to the office, and your dispatcher would be like, oh, here's your cheat sheet. And oftentimes it would have, like, the letterhead of another courier company. But it was just, like, something that was passed down and, like, you know, had companies that had gone out of business, like, crossed out, like, or whatever. They move, fuck it. And, You would take that, you cut it up, you put it on your tin, you tape it.
The tin, I think that's something that no one knows.
What's the tin?
The tin is where you kept your manifest. Your manifest holder.
Yeah.
For paperwork.
I think that's kind of not, doesn't exist anymore either.
I guess they probably have an app for it.
Yeah, probably. We have an app for it. What am I talking about? I know exactly what I'm talking about. I own a company. Yeah, we have an app. We have that everything that you would have written down at one point is now just completely in our system and automatically sends everything to the client. You can set the certain presets that the client can know, like, that their order was placed, when the courier is picking it up, when it's dropping off. There's no
real
reason
time
to have, and we can even have them sign our phones, so you don't have to get physical deliveries or physical signatures anymore for the delivery.
We had that, but I would never use it because it would kill my phone, and I'd be like, well, I'm just gonna use my phone like a pager because that's what I'm used to, and then type in the PODs and send them back.
Does that mean there's no need for binder clips on people's cycling caps anymore?
The binder clip... I don't understand people's obsession with the binder clip as being what associates them with couriers, especially with so many of the people I know who have binder clip tattoos being in New York. I'm like, and started within the last 10 years. I'm like, I bet you've never even actually delivered an envelope.
I used a lot of binder clips for a lot of shit.
But in New York, they only deliver bags. You only deliver bags of products. You don't even deliver envelopes.
Well, that's the thing, and that sort of goes back into where we sort of started this tangent a while back, was the bag size, and I think it was what you were talking about, Danny, is that, like, you know, it's not even documents, especially working in New York, you needed a big bag because of the kind of stuff that you were delivering. And I remember, like, years ago when you were up there, where you used to tweet out, you know, what's in my bag today. And it was just amazing, usually, the rundown.
Completely asinine things. Like, I think my favorite one that I remember tweeting that we talked about before is that I was riding the cargo bike one day and I picked up from a fashion PR firm going to numerous places, just fish bowls full of gumballs with various new product releases from, it was like L'Oreal or Revlon, stuffed into the gumballs. And it was, you know, part of the presentation of it was, there was the whole thing, so you couldn't really mess it up either.
But, yeah.
And that ended up, you know, a crazy pain in the ass job, because it was, I would deliver, so you'd take these to these messenger centers and I would show up with a fish bowl full of this. And the messenger center guy would be like, I can't take that. It's like, why? It's too big. And I'm like, dude, I brought this here on a bicycle. What do you mean you can't take this? So they made me take it through the freight entrance. And so I was on the cargo bike and I like came at like 1271 6th Avenue.
Lifting above your head onto the freight.
But I was in this loading dock with like an 18-wheeler. Yeah. It's an 18-wheeler and a bicycle courier. And that is... It was amazing.
Yeah, so it was a lot of run. It was also like, well, it sort of answers the question: what do messengers do after documents disappear? I really remember one time you were like bringing some guy back his sunglasses that he had left somewhere, you know, and just like just sort of random stuff like that.
My favorite one was actually kind of a long time ago. That was what's the fancy bowling alley down in like Gallery Place here in DC?
Hmm.
I went to a bowling alley, picked up three pairs of shoes, of bowling shoes,
yeah,
from the bowling alley, took them to the law firm, waited in the mailroom while someone from the mailroom took them to the attorney, and he tried on three pairs of shoes and then brought them back to me with a handwritten letter with the law firm's letterhead, letting them know which size shoe he wanted to schedule for his like bowling meeting with who knows who.
That's
insane. He just wanted to make sure that he had the right shoes.
So he could walk in there, and make sure he had the right... That's amazing.
We used to do a kosher meal delivery
for
this major law firm, and they would be... There was a falafel place, and you would go 10 blocks, and they would pay... Like, I guess they paid out of pocket like $50. And you would literally go, you pick up a falafel and some french fries, blast across the river. You had like 15 minutes to do it. All the time. Why? Because this lawyer wanted a kosher meal, wanted a falafel with french fries, and like oftentimes he'd deliver it, and the mail order, or the mailroom guys would be like, okay, and just like stick it on a shelf. Like, wow. Whatever.
Yeah. Once we get into the meat of this story, and it's, I don't know, there's like...
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going
it's
on.
It's a great story.
Michael Shannon, sort of cop with a gambling problem and a short fuse, who is going to steal this ticket that's basically cash that is being used for this other purpose, and that's why he's after... Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you know, and once it goes in the bag, it doesn't come out unless
it's... Urban food log.
Yeah. Once their first altercation comes in, JGL Wiley takes off from him and is just being chased throughout all these streets, or you sort of made the comment that most couriers were to just turn around and start fighting the guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Honestly, if I was a rookie like Joseph Gordon-Levitt is obviously in this film, and some man in a suit came running after me and said he needed the package back, I would have just given it to him. I'm like, okay, whatever, man.
But the whole like car chase thing, like nobody would have like put forth the effort to like outrun somebody. They would have just stopped and gotten beat up or gone to a fight. Like...
Yeah, or easily lost the guy. That's the craziest thing about this film.
It seemed like
around.
Especially when he was like riding the wrong way down traffic and could have made left turns anywhere, that it would have been over real quick. As far as getting lost.
I mean, that's what makes it a movie, I guess.
Like. Yeah. But you sort of had the story about like getting... Because at one point he's going down a one-way street the wrong way, and you had a nice story about getting chased in New York.
There was I was going up... Whatever the northbound, I think it was probably I don't remember what's northbound on the east side, but there was one of the undercover police cars that just looks like cabs, and he was in the bus only lane or something like that.
Yeah, but you didn't know at the time. You just
no, not
a cab
at all.
There.
And he was, or you know, he wasn't, whatever way he was there, and I kind of got squeezed into him and put my hand maybe on his windshield, and I think it was honestly like my key. Like that was dangling from my wrist, maybe smacked his windshield or something. It was sort of pissed him off in some manner that this cab literally started chasing me.
You disrespected the cab.
And it was just a cab. So I mean, obviously I'm not going to stop for a cab, and he chased me, and I was like, oh shit, there's a cab chasing me. So I took a left onto a one-way street in the wrong direction, and he continued to chase me, cut me off, and two dudes got out of the front seat. So I was like, okay, this isn't a cab, because it's kind of a thing that you encounter in New York a lot is undercover police officers in these unmarked yellow Crown Vicks. And they just got in my face and started saying things along the lines of like, we can make you disappear. what do you, and just like, in my mind, I didn't do anything wrong. I was like, I didn't crash into them where I don't know who, whatever was going on, but, and a crowd like came around me and I basically had to start asking them like, are you cops? And then they kind of, and enough people were like, seemed to be interested in that question. Are these guys cops? So they just got in their car and like drove off. And it was obvious that they were undercover yeah. cops. I'm like, man, great. Great job staying undercover.
Well, you know, you did touch their windshield.
I did.
So this was actually, I think, something that all of us liked in this movie. And me, just from what I do video-wise with, like, these Svenness videos I do, you know, analyzing cyclocross races, looking at different lines, how to get from one, what's quicker, what's not. Every time he came to this intersection, he would sort of do this math in his head, and they had this nice visual where they would show, like, the three or four different options that he could take and sort of the what he was already calculating would be the result, you know, running into a woman with a baby carriage or getting smacked by a van or whatever else. And you know, that was actually something when I was watching this, so I was curious how you guys would respond to it. I thought it was sort of cool. I like that aspect of it, but you know, as a visual and also just as a reality of that sort of mental, even I mean, subconsciously that sort of going through
totally,
your head.
I thought it was totally accurate. I mean, I haven't messengered full time for a couple of years, and I still like. Sometimes you just feel your brain click, and it's like looking for the best route, looking for the fastest way, or you know, like sizing people up because you're just thinking like, survive, survive, survive. So I thought that was pretty right on. I mean, a little more slick than how I think.
Well, it seemed like the path that he always picked, he had to like bunny hop stuff, which I thought was sort of inaccurate. But again, movie. But what do you think, Danny? Just about that sort of mental math every time you're.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, obviously, they had to Hollywood it up a little bit to make it exciting. But and all messengers do that, but not necessarily out of necessity. I feel like more so out of boredom, and just that's kind of our repetitive thing that happens every single day. That's the equivalent of the bicycle courier knowing how to process some sort of report in the quickest way possible, is being able to like look through cars, know to look at the front wheel of a car as opposed to
watch
the whole
brake
body
lights.
Itself. See people's movements, the way that people turn inside of a car to know that. But it's not that important.
Right.
It's not being like, I have to do this.
But that's even.
It's not like we're talking shop about that in the bar unless you're like 3 days into the job. Like, it's not anything that we talk about and like, this is what makes you a good courier. It's just like, that's just kind of the things that you see. You remember places where there's buildings or there's reflections that you can see through things. You can, like, I'll look at a driver and see where a driver is looking.
Right.
And things like that.
Take a piss.
But it's also not important. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, even just commuting.
Free sandwiches.
Yeah, I mean, you're always looking at the people who are, like, leaning right in their car when they're parked to make, because you know that door is popping open, you know, any second now, that kind
of
stuff.
That's what I thought of those scenes as doing, is illustrating that part of it. Is that there's more to riding through an intersection. But the most, you make more money if you don't run those lights.
Well, and that's sort of the thing that I think is sort of interesting talking to you all, since you've sort of been at this a while or done with it for a while, and dare I say older, that
we're young.
Yeah.
But we're older these days, which is weird.
But, like, stop it. Like, you're saying you're waiting at every intersection, and Jorge's, like, looking at these, like, pissed off. He sees these, you know, sort of messengers, like, being dangerous, doing stupid stuff, knowing that they're just going to happy hour and not actually like working. It just seems like it's not the best riding technique, maybe.
Yeah.
Or knowing that they're going to get like hit and then like quit and go back to art school, you know? Which is like a pretty, like, that was the equation. Like, oh, I'm going to be wild and crazy, be a courier.
So, every time you got to your destination and you're going to lock up your bike, so what, like 20, 30 foot skids? Because that's what this movie sort of portrays.
Yeah, that's how
you got
stop
a fishtail, unweight the back, and just sort of swing it all over the place.
Everywhere.
Take your helmet off. I don't know where. I guess the skidding on a track bike's cool.
I don't know.
They got free tires, I guess.
Should we talk about it? So there was actually one like long skid scene, and so Austin Horse, it was the doing a lot of the riding for Joseph Gordon-Levitt in here, and it did definitely look like on one of those scenes like they morphed his face.
I definitely thought that as well. Things looked like him, and I mean, he's a very extremely talented cyclist.
Yeah,
and I mean, skids aside, it's kind of funny that that's why they chose to illustrate him, his talent as a cyclist. Because honestly, that dude, if he put the time in, I feel like could be, or maybe he's a little old at this point, but could have been a really serious competitor as a mountain bike racer.
No, he's fast, he's strong. But it also, you know, that sort of reminded me of something else to bring up about a lot of the early shots on here where he's riding through traffic and just the point of view. Very Lucas Brunel.
Yeah. Which is funny. Like, I remember when Lucas first started doing all that stuff, and like,
I'm pretty sure he's never actually been a courier. I think he was like a software engineer, maybe came for money and really fell in love with some aspects of the subculture and wanted to document.
He was always like a dude that just hung out at the races.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's that tall guy from Boston.
Yeah.
And then he put that movie out, and people were like, wow, this is crazy. And then, I mean, I guess that's what he's still doing. I guess he's still going and traveling.
Well, that's the crazy thing. You know, even like we were talking with my wife earlier, she follows some of these Instagram feeds that they're just doing it now, where I know, you know, just from talking with Lucas in the past, because, you know, at one point he was like, oh, yeah, I got all that footage, but I never have time to edit. If you want to edit it, I'll just send it all to you. Like, he's got hours and hours and hours of stuff that's probably like super cool that'll never see the light of day. Just because I don't think he has the time to go through all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. He used to travel down to D.C. all the time.
Yeah.
I've never seen a D.C. video
right.
from him. I mean, all the time, but a couple times I saw
him. He was everywhere. Back then it was like big-ass camcorders.
Yeah, like one facing each way. So he did that with that whole setup on his, that, what was that? It's not a Ferrari. What was the road? Lamborghini.
Lamborghini. I mean, this is also before GoPros and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
so he was doing Iron Cross, on which is, you know, ultra cross race, 50, 60 mile cross race, you know, where a lot of people are racing mountain bikes. Like, I'm behind him just riding this race on my cross bike, you know, getting flats all over the place. He's racing it on that bike with road slicks.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And just like crushing. And I was like so stoked because, like, at least for like 20 miles, I was just in that rear camera. I was like, oh, when this comes out, I'm gonna blow up. And of course, never. I'm sure it's just like on a hard drive somewhere, if it even still exists.
Well, that was always the thing that for me about like Alley Cat Racing was like Lucas was a roadie. Like, he was a fit dude that was super fast. And he would go to these races and, like, tail whoever was winning and just, you know, videotape them. And I always just thought it was funny, like, we were talking about this earlier, like how can you brag about winning Alley Cats? Like, it's a totally different thing, but, like, anyone who's an actual road racer who's actually really fast and trains would just decimate everyone here. And I always thought that's, like, Austin was the type of dude that was kind of both, like, he was fit and fast, and
honestly kind of got a little bit of flack from the courier community for some times where he wasn't actively working as a courier,
but still,
and would be able to
go to like NACs and stuff
and win them. And I think the last couple of years he's spent put some time on the road and is deserved of those titles. And I honestly have no opinion about that really, but it is something that people talk about a lot.
Well, and that also like totally changed the whole messenger, like the NACs and the Worlds. It's like, oh, you're a sponsor.
Yeah, it stopped it went in two different directions at the same time, and it's still struggling. Now, we were talking about that earlier. Like, everything in general now is like, especially in the social media era of things, like, you're popular if you're sponsored and you get flown to places, or if you're a drunk piece of shit.
Those are the two ways to go.
Yeah, and it's kind of the way that the championships have gone. It's like,
whereas before, like, you were a respected courier if you made a lot of money and you did a lot of work. And those types of people don't give a shit about the NACs or, you know.
Except for Bruce. Bruce does still go to all of them.
Bruce does go. You know, I went to the NACS once in Richmond, because I was like, oh, well, it's in Richmond. And I didn't hang out. I ate ice cream with Doug and ordered pizza, and then I went to the finals and drove there.
Nice.
It's funny that you didn't go to that one.
I didn't go.
Yeah. What was I going to ask all about? Oh, back to the movie. Oh, well, first of all, just with the Alley Cast thing, that's I'm hoping if y'all are up for coming back, that's because I don't think any of us have seen the Alley Cat movie. So that would be a good one, a good one to do at some point. Just to see exactly what that's about.
It's a British film, right?
Is it? I'm not even sure.
I think I've heard of it, but yeah.
Is that the one with Jessica Simpson in it? Isn't she like she was like in one, right?
I don't know. It came out just like a couple years ago. Like it's so, a pretty new movie. Yeah. All right. At one point in this, JGL is, you know, getting harassed by this guy and takes a picture of his license plate and then goes to the police. And Jorge, your sort of bullshit meter went off on that one.
Yeah. Oh, why waste your time? You're going to go talk to the cops? Yeah, right. And tell them what? And then sit and wait for them to talk? Yeah. That would never happen.
Yeah.
I one time inherited from a punk house being evicted or whatever is a screen that Elliot Caldwell, for those people who might listen to this station, had made that was a U-lock. The screen was of a U-lock and within the shackle, it just said, "We don't call the police," which is like, people use a lot with certain things, but I thought, and that was very specific in my mind being a messenger thing. It was like, "You don't call the police." That was all over town for a little bit too.
But speaking of making phone calls, at one point, a big plot point is that this dirty cop that's at the central of the plot calls up the courier company and changes the destination of the of where this package is supposed to go. And then the original person found out about it, and you sort of made the observation, well, she had just called the company again, she could have changed it back to the original destination and the movie would have been over.
Absolutely. And could have just said, don't let anyone else change this destination. Like that's honestly not too far-fetched, and I think had happened at other times.
Yeah.
I worked as a CSR at a courier company for a while, and we had lists at our clients of like who was authorized to do certain things. It's not too far-fetched for them to... I mean, but it's a movie, you know.
Yeah, I know, but it's just, but that's why we're here. It's funny. We're supposed to, you know, instill a little reality into
it. You would get on your pager, you'd get the jobs come through, and then there'd be an asterisk, and it'd be like, no, and then it would list like people's like names and nicknames.
I love that.
And you'd be like, oh, why can't, you know, blah, 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 go to Deckard? Because they were super drunk and stoned and like went into the. Went into the mailrooms, you know, refrigerator, ate all the food, and so that no, they can't do the boom boom run anymore. They're banned. They're banned. Or the freak out. Can't do the freak out anymore.
So this takes place in New York City. A couple things that you noticed, Danny, right away in here. One, they're sort of having this conversation on an empty street, no cross street traffic, and then the second one, he spends a lot of time in alleys.
There are no alleys in Manhattan that you can use as a shortcut, with the exception being there was a Bon Me place on East 33rd between Lexington and whatever the east side of that would have been. That's the only alley I can think of in Midtown. And also, crosstown work, or riding crosstown in Manhattan is always a huge pain in the butt.
There's
you
no
rarely
car
ever
honking
see
in this movie. Exactly.
That's an interesting point as well. Yeah, not too much car honking, but... I think a lot of companies, even if you're going river to river, they'll charge a surcharge on that because going across town is so difficult to do.
Why is that? Just because of the traffic?
One-way, one-lane streets.
Okay.
Yeah, because the avenues are huge going north and south, and then for the most part, at least through Midtown, it's just these one-ways going all the way across, and it's just really slow moving. That's why bikes are so much faster, obviously, but as a biker, if you're just crisscrossing town, that's going to take you way longer to drop... X many packages as it would to go north south dropping X many packages, but you know when you dispatch in New York, New York is one of the few cities left. I feel like where dispatching is really important because it's so huge and it's just these big avenue sweeps. Like dispatching New York, you have someone going up west, someone coming down west, someone going up east, someone going down east, and then you have your cleanup guy doing like waiting for triple rushes.
So what does that mean? Like what is a sweep? What is a
Yeah, it's like every city also has its different terminology.
Yeah,
I would never say sweep.
Strokes, What are some of the other weird ones I've heard? Chicago has a weird way to refer to it.
That teeners, rushes, triples.
But what's the to describe a stroke? I use the term stroke. That's in DC what we call it. But I feel like Chicago they have a weird. I forgot what it is. But it, like for basically your route of going in a certain direction and whatever it could be, whether it's a straight route of going up a street or making a loop of something. But there's a different terminology that every city has. It's different.
Yeah. I mean, and I was working for Andy's company doing this flower delivery crap, and I was like, yo, I'll be there in a mom. Gonna clear up in a mom. Yo. Because in Philly, yeah, that's everyone says yo, everyone says mom. And they're like, what? It's like, I'll be there in a moment. A mom. They didn't get it.
Yeah, so a lot of the old heads will, instead of 10-4, will say bet, and that always went over my head because of my first company that was not part of our radio vernacular, and then it kind of when I switched to another company, everyone was saying, it was like, what the fuck are you guys six. Talking about? Yeah,
the letter six. What do you mean six? 10 minus 4, 10, 4, 6.
the radio slang, the jargon, the nicknames, that's what really made things fun. That's and I feel needed. Like that's what they could have done with this film, but it also really gone over so many people's head. But
right.
I mean,
when you were on the radio, it was so much fun, like just talking about stuff. Because not only do the couriers have nicknames, like the clients have nicknames, and I mean, and they're like, and they're great, you know, it's like, let's just say Dick Steen Shapiro here, we all called Cockstein.
Yeah.
And they all had great nicknames, and everything had a nickname, and so you'd come over the radio and you could get a point across without actually really saying very much of anything. Mm. You'd like 18-10-8 Cockstein. Like that's and like everyone on the radio knew where I was and what I'd just done, you know, and that's all you'd hear all day, and you'd throw in these little jokes and it would make it fun. But
for 2 years I was still replying to emails and text messages as copy, 10-4, copy.
Mm-hmm. I think I may have gotten some of those from me.
Or 10-4 show. Because that's when you want to say 10-4, but you really want to let them know that like you're really going to come through and you're going to do this because you say faux show.
A couple other things happening in here that we had sort of talked about. One, the efficacy of sketching.
I feel like that's a New York thing. Like no other city... But that's also like been amplified through like the whole alley cat racing video shit.
Because
nobody during the workday would ever sketch. I mean,
when we were bored, it was more of like an off the job bored type.
I guess
thing.
For people that don't know, just sketching is
grabbing onto a vehicle and right. The only time I really regularly sketched was I destroyed the fork on a work bike, and the only other bike I had was a single speed mountain bike geared for single speed mountain biking, and I rode that for a week, and so I sketched a little bit just because I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Spinning like a just under 16, gear for a 30 or whatever the heck it was.
Yeah. You can understand that. Okay, so the sort of the near the end of this movie, the fun thing, and I think that we all sort of agree why this movie really wasn't horrible, was that it had the Hollywood version of messenger culture and riding in the beginning, and then sort of the middle section it had, okay, now we're going to actually talk about the plot.
Forgot there was story. The courier thing.
Yeah. So, you know, we all just sort of sat up there and watched it for a while, and then in the end they sort of got on the bikes again. Yeah. But
because the day-to-day of being a courier is very boring.
Yeah.
There's nothing worth putting into a
film. I'm gonna do this crossword today. It's gonna be sick.
Well, that's another movie that weren't you saying like
I wanted to eat an avocado for lunch, but my knife got confiscated, so I can't buy an avocado unless I go. You know, that's the actual struggle of being a curvy.
I'm super hungry.
I think that not even
over.
I didn't charge my phone. Like my day is fucked. Like this is the worst. That day I got chased by the cop. Whatever. That was nothing. But the day that my phone didn't charge. That was the worst day I ever
went. How long can I ride on a slow leak? Let's see.
Oh, yeah. Or how long can you just... How much money can you make on a flat? There's some friends of mine in New York that was like the game that they played. And if you found yourself in the position that you could make some money on a flat, you would do it.
Yeah.
And then you'd talk about it later. That was like one of the few times I feel like you can talk about money these days is when it's like... Because no one makes any money, really. I mean, but it's funny to talk about money when you're talking about how much you made on a flat tire.
Or drunk.
Well, you're talking about the confiscated knife that our friend Kevin has this story about. I think he was on jury duty and he was about to go in and had like his knife on him, so he was like, I can't take this into the courthouse, and he like ditched it in the bushes in front of the DC district court. And then, you know, went and did his jury duty and came back out and was, like, digging through the bushes for his knife and pulled out, I think it was, like, a machete that somebody else ditched in the same bush. He was like, oh, that's not mine, and, like, threw it back in there and, like, found his knife. Yeah.
Dude, in Richmond, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18 years ago, everyone had their bowls that they would stick under their seat.
Yeah, so, well, there was a... When I was working in Richmond, there was, like, there was one brick missing at 400 North 7th, that courthouse, and everyone would just stash their shit in the one missing brick.
Oh, that's amazing. The bench. There was, yeah.
And not even just couriers, like, everybody. Like, people that's would be like, funny. Oh, crap. Oh, wait, there we go. And they was just right there, right by the door, and you could stash your stuff in the missing brick in the wall.
One of the other things that, Jorge, you were saying sort of rang true, you know, not necessarily the terminology, but the end where our protagonist is in trouble and they're calling in for this flash mob, basically, you know, getting messed with and calling in all of the other couriers. And one of the things, like Danny, you pointed out, a lot of the dispatchers were New York City messengers in mm-hmm. in that scene, which was sort of cool. But also you were just saying just the culture of the community.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have nothing in common with somebody, but you're like, oh, you're a bike courier? Well, I'm a bike courier, too. And if I see you and something's happening, I'll, like, your stories about John Joseph Cro-Mag are outrageous. But, like, yeah, if I see you and, like, you know, I've seen you around, I know who you are, I'm going to help you out no matter what. Or if I go to another, I think I said this before, if I go to another town, like, oh, I'll go to one post and find all the SF couriers because I need a couch to crash on. And I would do the same if someone came to Philly and was like, hey, I'm from SF, I'm a courier. Okay, cool, like, I'm going to buy you a beer at the bar? Like, then that's just how it is.
Well, we got some beers, I don't know, a week or so ago, and I was talking about how I would see John Joseph in when I worked in New York a lot.
Yeah.
He wasn't a courier, but not at
Doesn't
the time.
Doesn't he do those tours?
He's being a triathlons now. So I'd see him like on his tri bike wearing his tri dork stuff, but like, and I always saw him on Prince Street. And Prince Street has a bike lane and cabs are always disrespecting it. And whether it be me getting into something with a cab driver or him getting into something, he was always there and be like, "You all right? You good? You need help? You good?" And then that happened to me. I was like, "Oh, that was well, that's John Joseph." And I started doing it to him. And, like, we just started seeing each other around. And we're like, respect. And I'm like, cool.
Wow.
Cool.
That's nice.
And that comes back to, like, the people that don't get that are, like, you know, the rookies that wouldn't buy into that culture. It's just, like, that's why they don't stick around. Because it's a job that you're not getting paid a ton of money. And, like, it's going to rain. It's going to suck. It's going to be cold. People are going to treat you like shit. But, like, that's the pay. Like, knowing that you're part of a bigger community where if something happened or like if Danny broke his leg or whatever happened, I'd call Bill and be like, oh, we gotta do a benefit right now. We gotta raise funds. We need $1,000 right now. Yeah. Let's do this. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, there's like a raise lot it. Of Philly couriers who've been injured recently, and I wish that they would do their races on Saturdays because I feel like a lot of DC folks would go up and maybe, but they keep doing them on Fridays. But it, like that's still around in the community, and I think that's interesting.
No matter what, like you would do it. And if I only had $10 in my pocket, I'd give, you know, 8 of them to whoever needed it and mm-hmm. then buy them a beer.
No, that's...
Philly price is $2.
Yeah. Nice thing with Philly. I guess sort of ending up here, one thing that I meant to ask you in the beginning, because we had talked about it just with watching this movie based on messengers and stuff, that when you all started and you met people, you know, mm-hmm. sort of ask you what you do... I mean, y'all had some just what they would compare right. or ask you about.
When this film came out, I feel like it was the first mainstream bicycle messenger thing that had happened in a while. And I was saying that when I first started, I was still getting, "Are you a bicycle courier? Oh, like Puck?"
Yeah. And that was one of the funny, because I think what you had actually mentioned Quicksilver, which would be more just aging myself that I thought you would get as opposed to Puck, which... All right. I wonder if anybody's. I don't think anybody's being asked about this movie. If that's what it's like,
I think they were. Maybe.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. Maybe for a minute.
Yeah. So in the end, would you recommend this film for somebody to watch?
Oh, fuck yeah, it's great.
Sure, yeah. I think it's a great movie. Awesome. Anyway, Jorge and I seem to both agree that the best Bicycle Courier film is a French-Canadian film called 2 Seconds.
All right.
And I would definitely recommend for anybody to watch it. Any cyclist, actually, also, because it's beyond just messengering.
It has the cranky Italian road dude that owns a shop that mentors somebody. It's great.
Well, maybe in a month we should come back and watch that one.
I'd be into it. I love that movie.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for doing this.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, there you have it. Thanks, Danny and Jorge. That was a ton of fun. I hope you all enjoyed that. If you did, let me know. Shoot me an email, feedback@cxhairs.com, or hit me up on Twitter or Instagram @cxhairs. Call the helpline if you want, 405-CX-HAIRS. Let us know about this episode or any others. And if you like this episode, maybe we'll do more, but we got to hear back from you. I had a good time. ShredScienceNutrition.com. ShredScienceNutrition.com. Go visit there. Go fill out the contact page. Go learn more about what they can do for you and your nutrition and your goals. HealthIQ.com/CXHairs. Go contact HealthIQ for us. Learn more about life insurance. Get some good rates. They like low heart rates. They'll even forgive some of the stuff that other life insurance companies won't. They're going to do right by you. HealthIQ.com/CXHairs. And finally, on Instagram, get your pictures up there and tag them with WAP Power Contest. WAP Power Contest. Also include @CXHairs on there, because I'd like to see what y'all are doing. And that's going to be awesome. You can win a pair of brand new Power Endurance tires from Michelin. And finally, go to wideanglepodium.com. Become a member. Cheapest way, $5 a month and up from there. Please support us so we can continue doing what we're doing, and maybe look at more Messenger movies with Danny and Jorge. Maybe we'll do 2 Seconds or Quicksilver, or who knows? All right, go ride in traffic. We'll talk to you soon.